Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Sorry for the late start. There was Entropy was special today. I think they got. I think that the YouTube API doesn't allow them to work anymore, so logging in was more painful. I had to create a separate account. I mean, it's what we've seen from Google. Google is exploratory at first, but then they chop out services that are too useful for the independent creators. And Entropy is one of the services, of course, that has been targeted as a competitor to Super Chats. Google is typically trying to acquire as much users like they did with Google Hangouts on Air. It was a super platform that the right was using to discuss live, to have all those hangouts. The days of blood sports have all been on Google Hangouts on Air, and eventually they chop it out because it's not enough useful to them and to their monopoly. And now they are chopping off access to the API for independent platforms like Entropy. Dan Simon says, why no chat on Twitter? Twitter has automatic censorship, JF. Yeah, I mean, I think that Elon has to do a lot of work on Twitter before we can attract a crowd there. But I'm sure he will do them because I've seen Twitter improve massively. I think that Elon just didn't have time yet to get to getting a chat, you know, because the broadcast option of Twitter has been a way for power to be leveraged by the mainstream media. I mean, they had a bunch of special privileges, the CNNs of this world, the C-SPAN, that kind of stuff. And they had exclusive access to this platform. So let's not forget that Twitter streaming has not developed as a user-oriented streaming platform. Precisely this kind of media that had access to it, they are people who don't want a chat because the chat would make them look bad. So yes, I hope that Elon will do the work to change it, and I have no doubt that he will, because today I visited Community Notes again, and Community Notes has massively improved. Now we have our rating as a Community Note contributor. So basically, how often are we right? How often do we differ from the rest of the community? And it gives us a score. And the score unlocks more power and the ability to start our own Community Notes. So that is very appreciated. And on top of it, Elon has fully integrated now Community Notes to the full Twitter experience. So when I browse randomly on a Jordan Peterson tweet, I end up being able to rate, and I end up being able to see a lot of options as a contributor of Community Notes, which I couldn't before. For example, I can see if a tweet is on the verge of getting a Community Note, but is below threshold. I can see that there are people trying to get a Community Note on the tweet, but haven't succeeded yet. So that is super useful, because now I can browse through Twitter, and I can, because before that, I would only see the Community Notes like any user when it was judged as useful. That was, it was very painful to you. You couldn't even know if a Community Note was in process for a given tweet. Now we see it in process, so we can intervene earlier and we can make sure that the bad Community Notes don't appear. And if you're right about your calls, if you're trustable, the platform rewards you with a score. And once a score is reached, you can do your own Community Notes from scratch. Balloon Nut sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, do YouTube and other platforms that provide audience demographic data include sexual identity in that data? Also, are trans women bundled with women for gender stats? Definitely, if you go on an evolved platform like YouTube, you can know the gender of the people watching you. And yes, I'm pretty sure that, Of course, it's going to be the gender that is reported by the person. So if the person says, I'm a woman, YouTube is going to classify that person as a woman. But I think it's such a small percentage that I don't think it impacts channels like mine, especially channels that are right wing. We know that we have a mostly male audience, and this is reflected in the demographic statistics. However, what you mentioned will become very important going forward. And this is what's so beautiful about how leftists, they are good at taking over society. They are good at making their abstract, deceptive views of the world a reality. They don't care if it's not real as they say it. They care about making it real. And what they will make real very soon is totally biased gender statistics. Now you're going to watch graphs coming from science, and people are going to be like, look, there are women who have a beard. And look, there are women who are 6 foot tall and have that many kilograms of muscle mass. And it's not going to be woman. It's going to be trans woman, basically, that will pop off as woman because science will integrate the whole Marxist prior of, if they identify as woman, they are woman. And the leftists are going to close out the gender gap on all measures, including hard scientific ones like height, weight, that kind of measures. This is going to be fascinating in the next 30 years. Because we're gonna have to integrate this to our debate tactics, you know. Leftists will have more argument going on their side because they will have biased the data acquisition part of the science. It will be effectively true in the leftist mindset that some women die of testicular cancer. You know what I'm saying? Blanket says, Jeff, any news on the TMZ thing? Has TMZ released the clip of you yet? No, I haven't seen. If they released it, it must have been on cable TV or something I don't have access to. Or it's possible they didn't release it. So perhaps someone in the press room said, oh, I know this guy. We don't want him on the show. Maybe something like this. That's really too bad because they approached me in an open way and I felt like we could have an interesting conversation, but it didn't happen, or if it happened, I don't know where it happened. Balloon Nut says, this kind of deception is already prevalent in some places. 90% of the top female Street Fighters players are female. Are female in quotation mark. Okay, I get what you mean. I didn't know. So it's already in the e-gaming sector. It's already happening. Okay. Shamrock says, I cringe every time I hear or read the term cis. Well, then you must be a fan of Elon Musk's approach, which is to say that cis is a slur. My two most autistic audience members, Joel Surrett and Gerard Ruffman, just met on Twitter. This will lead to a rip in the normie autism continuum that could end the universe as we know it. Two guys who have been super fans of JF and fans to the point of I was like, slow down, guys. You guys look like a bot that I would have hired to promote me. You're so enthusiastic and you use so many emojis. Be careful. I don't want you to get banned from Twitter because Twitter might think that you're a bot. And Ruffman was saying, Elon, to all those who claim I am a bot or some guy working for JF, the answer is I'm not. I am completely independent and operating on my own free will. I am just a super fan of JFG tonight, because it is the greatest show of all the internet. And even Joel Surrett joined in and said, give me the Turing test. They are ready to pass the Turing test to be declared human. But the problem is I believe that ChatGPT is headed toward making the Turing test obsolete to some extent. Go Away says, will I be called a cis male on Threads? Oh my God, Threads is attracting the worst of Twitter. We had Ron Perlman, you know, this actor with a bizarre face. He said, I'm bringing my business to Threads. My business, and you know how people say my business when you buy a burger somewhere? I'm bringing my business to you, which means I'm paying here. I'm playing to influence the burger. Ron Perlman was putting it as such. I'm bringing my business to Threads. The problem with Ron Perlman on Threads, it's nothing. This is where Threads will suck. Ron Perlman being retweeted by leftists for saying absolutely unhinged stuff about Trump or whatever is not interesting. The interesting part is the friction. This is why I truly think that Threads will fail. Threads will not be an interesting place even for leftists. Threads would have had a shot if they could somehow be interesting for the people they attract. But Ron Perlman is nothing. In a regular world, Ron Perlman is a has-been who gets forgotten and nothing he says matter. But in the Twitter world, Ron Perlman was something because of the mimetic potential of him saying such unhinged, crazy stuff about Trump, and people who were supporters of Trump retweeting it and bringing it up and being aggressive toward him, or not aggressive, but being in conflict with him. Now, put Ron Perlman on Threads. What is it? Oh, Trump, did rah. And retread. Not interesting. There's no friction. There's no conflict of existence. There's no... Why is it funny? Why is it wrong? Why is it that what he says is offensive to 50% of the population and not the other 50%? If you don't have the two sides on your side, it's not interesting. Eventually, the treaders will flock back to Twitter because they'll be bored. Balloon Nuts sends $60. Thank you so much for this massive show of support. He says, JF, European civilization is now prevalent all over the world. It stands to reason that non-Europeans will select for traits that thrive within European-style settings. Over thousands of years, we may see all human beings converge toward being more like Europeans. What do you think about this? I think it's a beautiful dream, but it's not happening. Forget it. You want to know how much power Europeans have to change other populations toward their direction? Go to Detroit. There's nothing more European than Detroit, right? The legal system fully established by white people. The laws voted by white people who have power over the whole of the United States, the tradition, the history, all, you know, schools run by white people, a civilization established by white people, a constitution defending rights by white people. But you go to Detroit and there isn't the changing process that you talk about there. To the contrary, if anything, there was a temporary influence on the black population in the U.S., for example. There was a temporary effect in the 40s to the 60s and 70s. This temporary effect was basically that introduced the Christian marriage lifestyle to the black community. But all it took is a little loosening of the system, and eventually the blacks converged back to an African model of dating. and of family building, which is female-oriented polygamy, basically twerking, lines of twerking females in front of the ambulance as... I don't even know why they twerk in front of ambulances, but they do. You couldn't do it in a nation that we're talking, the blacks in the US are what, 13% of the population, 14% of the population. You had the crushing power of a super majority over an extreme minority, and you couldn't reduce the crime rate of blacks any more than for a couple of decades as they were tempted by your Christian lifestyle and influenced by it, and influenced also by the racial mixing to some extent, because these black populations have integrated some European genes. So forget it. Now your theory is, don't you think that India will be Europeanized? Europeanized? No, I don't think so. People converge back to their nature because the big key of European civilization is the European people. It's not like a legal system that made us who we are. It's not even a religion. It is the sum of the natural selection pressure that were operating for tens of thousands of years onto white people, combined to their whole way of handling the commons, which are religion and law and all these things. If you don't have the whole combo, you have nothing. Take European law, impose it onto India, you still have a... And to some extent, look at what happened in the big tech sector of between 2017 and 2020. 2021, 2022, the whole rise of censorship. This will give you, and censorship by operatives that were absolutely corrupted, that didn't even have the commercial interest of the company they were working for at heart. They were operatives that were halfway between the FBI and the big tech sector, and they were doing the corruption. They were, as shown in the Twitter file, they were exchanging information and making the censorship happen. This gives you an idea of, it's a model, it's an experiment. This is a natural experiment that gives you an idea what happens when you bring a noble European setting like capitalism or law, or the US Constitution, and you impose it on India, because literally big tech is India. I mean, big tech is populated by India. So we might as well say it's a model of India. And in fact, it's a model of the top of the society of India, because the people who end up immigrating through these work visas are selected at the top of the Indian society. So you end up with a lot of Indian engineers at Twitter. Now, do they respect free speech? No, they don't. It doesn't matter that they're in a country that has principles around free speech. They will totally violate them. They are simply incapable of being assimilated to the point of integrating these fundamental notions. Like, you don't organize with the government to shut down someone. And since the subject of shutting down is what it is today, was the Fresh and Fit podcast shut down by some terrorist action or some corrupt action from within a company that of electricity? Because what's been happening today is that Nick Fuentes was again on the Fresh and Fit podcast. Apparently they took him for many days, and they're publishing again and again live performances with him. It was funny because it was much more pleasant to the eye. By the way, yesterday I said I wouldn't watch the Nick Fuentes content because Destiny was there. But I decided that it was a big enough event that I had to watch parts of it. So I watched it. I watched part of it yesterday. I watched part of it today. It was very interesting today because somehow, somehow they said, "Oh, let's make Nick Fuentes with sexy females," and they brought these sexy females, and it was so much more pleasant than the Black episode, which was mostly ugly females. Now they brought top models, and it's like, let's just have Nick Fuentes plus top models, white top models. That was fun. That was fun to the eye. Much more digestible. Now, it only lasted 1 hour, and we only basically got to the start of the discussion. And there's 40 minutes of this that's just people introducing themselves. And after about an hour, there was a shutdown. It wasn't a shutdown at the Rumble level. So I don't think that Rumble is at play here. It was an electrical shutdown. And they were actually on a UPS battery that we got to see a little bit of the dark part of the stream without the lights, with the things slowly closing down. And we were hearing the beep, beep, beep of the UPS battery. So that is an absence of electricity that was to the building. And AF Post points out, America First Post points out on Twitter that the outage has affected specifically the home. It didn't affect the neighborhood. Customers affected one. It affected specifically the Fresh and Fit apartment. So we have to study the possibility that someone physically went in and cut cables, someone physically went in and shut down the breakers. I don't know what are the possibilities where a single house is lacking electricity in a very populated, presumably this is a populated touristic area. Apparently they're renting kind of an apartment. Cause under investigation, we will be dispatching a power restoration specialist to the area as soon as possible. Customers affected one. Estimated time of restoration in 4 hours from now. We have to study the possibility that this is terrorist extremist who were annoyed at the fact that Fresh and Fit were on a very heated discussion, which I can't even reproduce the details of, because we're talking about the historical subject that one cannot speak of, certainly not one Canadian. It was the historical subject that I cannot describe in detail. So, and it wouldn't be the first time that we see people taking actions on their home because they are offended. You know, there is a whole history of Israeli terrorism in Israel itself and in other countries. There is a history of generally of political extremists attacking. We had the Muslim case of Je Suis Charlie in France. People getting killed for having published a cartoon of Mohammed. It's possible that someone, maybe an extremist, maybe a government agent, Speaker's Corner raised the possibility of the feds. It's possible that a basic employee of the electrical company could have received a call, urgency, may have been deceived or may have been controlled or extorted by the government to cut the power. But it looks like we have resolved. It's such an important event, what's happening here, because it means we have resolved all of the steps at the virtual level. the internet was still working. The Rumble was still working. So we have the platform level. We have the streaming level. We have the means to talk about these things in a physical area. And they shut down the electricity. Or I say they. We can also study the hypothesis that this is a completely random event, has nothing to do with the subject they were talking about. Maybe, maybe. But it shows you that there's still one thing that is potentially a seat of attack, a target of attacks, the electrical grid, as predicted, although in many wrong ways, by Rachel what's her name? the TV host, Rachel Maddow. You know, she was paranoying around Putin and Trump controlling the electrical grid. And someone was saying in the regular chat earlier, you know, they often project. So if they're afraid that Putin will shut down the electrical grid, it looks like here what we have is a shutdown of the electrical grid by someone with leftist or Jewish Israeli sympathies of some kind. Absolutely fascinating. Now, Nick was performing extremely well. Nick performed extremely well against Destiny yesterday. I want to come back on this. Yesterday, we saw that Destiny is still the same Destiny that I beat in a debate, where I brought issues of genotype-phenotype relationships about race, and where he basically said in a debate back in the Bloodsports days, I have to go away. I have to leave. I have to do research for a couple of weeks before I come back to you on this. Because you say something, it's important, but I have to go check it out. And we still had the very same Destiny. And of course, what did he do? He went away. He never addressed the facts. And instead, he started throwing ad hominems at me and trying to get activated on some hit pieces. Trying to get some hit pieces activated against me. That is the strategy of Destiny. He does it out of frustration that there was... I think I can point to the moment he started, you know, the mass dropped on Destiny. Because people who know about internet history will remember that I've been on Destiny's stream on Twitch 3 or 4 times before he started attacking me at the personal level. And he was super interested at what I had to say as a libertarian. And eventually we got to the subject of race. And even then, it was somehow interesting. But eventually there was a super chat on Warski Live, where the super chatter was saying a joke about Jews. And it's not important what the joke was. It was about money and stuff. But I heard Destiny on that podcast as I was co-hosting it. And he said, oh, so why is he saying this? Because we love money? He was saying a we that was inclusive of himself as a Jewish person. And that day, I said, so you're a Jew. And I said, I hope that everyone has understood what just happened. Destiny is Jewish. And Destiny, instead of being honest about it and engaging on this or telling me this is wrong, I was just joking. He went on a very dishonest campaign with his own audience, changing his Twitter bio to say, Jewish. Misleading his audience into believing that he was denying being Jewish, that he wasn't Jewish. So, I'm going to laugh at JF. I'm going to write Jewish in my bio. But he never denied being Jewish, nor did he say the we I've said was an error or I misspoke. He merely led to his audience believing that he wasn't Jewish and that this was all a joke, but he never said it was a joke. So I still believe in that we. I'm still hung up to what someone has said about himself and how he self-identifies. And it led an impossibility of relationship between him and me, an impossibility of conversation, because I found who he was. I found that we that no one wanted to understand, that he may not have wanted to speak himself. But I heard it. So that is the story of me and Destiny. All this to say, Destiny doesn't do research. Destiny doesn't have time to become an intellectual on any single question. And he therefore is a very poor debater. He is admittedly not even able to understand the specific facts of any specialist issue of any kind. So when he comes to these debates, it is with absolutely ridiculous talking points. His big talking point against Nick, and Nick was totally demolishing him on history of American interventionism and the influence of Israel on this. And his point on the whole deplatforming aspect of the question about Jews is, well, maybe it's not that the Jews control the world, which is a straw man to begin with. So let's move aside this straw man. But his explanation is, it's because businesses don't have commercial interest in being associated with people who disagree with Jews. So it was trying to frame the entire deplatforming against the anti-Semites or so-called anti-Semites as, well, it's just a business. It's business interest. And SSRI Kozer has the right response to this talking point. And Nick Fuentes did beautifully because this whole theory relies on, well, there's no double standard that's particularly applied to the anti-Semitism question. If you attack any minority, I wish that Nick was clearer on this, because his whole point was, if you attack any minority, you're going to get the same treatment. I wish that Nick pointed out that one of the extreme minorities in this world is white heterosexual men. And they get bashed on an everyday basis. There's never been a single person canceled, ever, for saying things as raw as kill all white men, that kind of stuff. It never happened. And it never happened that the people who say, well, the white family is the problem, white supremacy is the problem, whiteness needs to get rid, we need to get rid of whiteness. None of this is subjected to even banning from any single platform, let alone social canceling at the national level. And SSRI Kozer has a very good point to say to Nick in response to, it's just the free market. Companies just don't like it. He says, it's crazy that there are people who seem to think that the deplatforming of individuals like Nick Fuentes and Ye is due to market pressures and not external groups, often using their influence in the market as leverage. You know, you have the guy of the ADL here laying down exactly what leads to these people getting banned from social media.
So literally, we opened a center in Silicon Valley back in 2017. And the woman who runs it, she's next.
That doesn't sound like the free market. That doesn't sound like, oh, if it was the free market, oh, people just naturally don't like positions against Israel. Well, why would you need to open up a center in Silicon Valley? If it was the natural convergence of people's taste, why would you need? What's the goal of this center? Well, the goal of this center is to pressure something into existence that otherwise wouldn't be.
Facebook executive. I have software engineers and data scientists working at ADL. We're monitoring all this stuff. And we're working with all the platforms, by the way, Google and YouTube and Meta and Twitter. And
so they are working by sending the email or the call. And that call is, if you don't ban this, we'll call you an anti-Semite platform.
Reddit and Steam and Amazon, all these companies, from like Apple to Zoom, we work with all of them, okay? That's relevant because we've been working with Twitter now for real, since it was founded. We worked with the old regime, working with the new regime.
There he is laying out how it's not free decision making by the people or by the corporation. It's not something that people have in their own preferences. It's a bunch of operatives who are targeting people, targeting tweets, monitoring, and then they are reporting and saying, if you don't do anything about it, you're in trouble. And they tried putting Elon Musk in trouble. You saw that it had nothing to do with the free market here. They tried putting Elon Musk in trouble because he was letting those opinions be expressed. So it's a massive operation of extortionism. That's what's happening. Dick Masterson says, it's surreal to see watching Destiny try and justify 40 years of American global military imperialism against Nick Fuentes, whose main point seems to be, maybe we shouldn't have. It was fascinating because to take the anti-war position on the right is putting the left in such a terrible place, because Destiny can fool his audience when he's alone at the mic. But when you're against Nick Fuentes or someone like me, we're going to hold you morally responsible for all of the Israeli influence that led to all of the wars of the last few decades. That is a lot of human deaths you're going to have to stand by. And that's what we saw, basically. We saw Destiny trying to jungle with, oh, you know, wars. Oh, you know, there is American consensus that we should go into these wars. American consensus. And he was justifying how, it's not so much that the right and the left are corrupted by the same set of influences. It's just that there's American consensus on these wars. Oh my God, we have a leftist here who has been pushed into the corner of advocating for the wars of the Middle East. I mean, I can see the potential deception that existed back then that would lead someone to be fooled and say, oh, well, they have weapons of mass destruction, or, oh, they're Muslims, let's do something about it. But it's unbelievable that you'd be in 2023 knowing that all of the reasons were bullshit and lies, and be standing by it. And why is Destiny still standing by those wars based on lies? I suspect that the "we" that he said in 2017 has something to do with it. Rachel Maddow says, she talked about Nick Fuentes being a guest speaker at an upcoming event in Arizona, by the Arizona College Republicans United, without saying his name. She only refers to him as a neo-Nazi.
Today, various parts of the Arizona Republican Party were in a sort of panic mode after an Arizona College Republican group announced that the headline speaker for its next convention is going to be a guy who's a neo-Nazi. The group's flyer for this upcoming conference listed three different county Republican parties on the flyer as if they were co-sponsors of the event with the neo-Nazi speaker. After one,
we heard you the first time, Rachel, but I know you're gloating, right? One occasion to mix up the Republican Party with neo-Nazism. I'm not going to miss it.
One Republican Party official from Maricopa County posted that online and publicly begged for party officials to officially distance themselves from this neo-Nazi event. Those three counties, the Republican Party organizations in those three counties, ultimately came out and said that they are not part of this event. Whew, you know, okay.
She loves making these awkward moments. Okay. So at least you dissociate from the neo-Nazi, but you had him.
Bullet dodged. Three Arizona Republican Party county organizations are not, despite earlier reports, sponsoring the neo-Nazi speaker at their conference. That said, this College Republicans group from Arizona still is. They're the ones who invited him, and they are absolutely still hosting him. So there's.
I really don't care. It's Rachel Maddow here framing the story in her own way. There was a time at which there was a conception of America where what Rachel Maddow was saying there would be considered totally beside the track. I mean, colleges, free speech, First Amendment, government funded. There is no reason why Nick Fuentes wouldn't be invited on any of these campus activities. And I'm pretty proud of how successful he is at, from his very isolated and censored position. It's very fascinating to me how this, in the last few months, he's been driving things into the mainstream. Again, you know, it's like, you would think that the censorship eventually would tire him. And it's quite impressive also to me, I have to share this, he decided to go very far in his beliefs. Not to the point where I reproach him, but to the point that I can't even go because of Canadian law concerns. And it is quite fascinating that he took on this most complicated battle, the ultimate historical question, the one that gets you canceled instantly anywhere in the world, even the US, under the First Amendment. It is quite fascinating to me that he decided to go there, and that, you know, I thought it was perhaps just a little moment with Ye, but no, he seems to be wanting to bring again this subject, which you could see on edgy TV shows back in the 80s, you could see people being invited and discussing this historical subject, but it kind of disappeared. It disappeared in the late 90s and 2000s as there were more and more controls put on speech, and eventually it disappeared from social media also. But Nick is being successful at bringing it back, bringing back a very edgy subject. And I find this absolutely commendable. I'm hopeful for the future, and I hope that this discussion actually happens. I can't say that it really happened yet. First, there was this boxer guy who was very annoying in the podcast. You know, I don't have much to say about him. He was correct on many points he was bringing, but holy shit, is it annoying to have someone who can only add aggression to the audio stream. On top of it, the fresh and fit guys, they don't know how to set up a mic. I have the impression still as of today, as I was listening to the stream, I have the impression that we're not hearing even the individual mic of people. What I hear is a canny room echoing sound that is absolutely not professional. There seems to be a cardioid, dynamic, weird microphone somewhere catching the whole room. And we're hearing it as a canny, bang, 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 like you were speaking in a can of soup. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And yet you can see that he has the same mic as me. This is the professional standard mic for everyone. But it's not enough to have the mic. You have to have the mic. You have to process it. It is absolutely low level. who made these two people believe that they could operate a podcast? I have no clue. So there was this aggression of bad mic practices, bad preamp, bad processing of the sound. And then there was on top of it a stupid, aggressive, bipolar boxer who was turning Zerka, that's his name. Remus says, Zerka actually did have me laughing pretty hard. He's a retard, but he has that retard strength in a funny way. Well, yeah, but it was annoying. It was annoying to see him mess a perfect performance by Nick Fuentes. Because remove Zerka, and actually the podcast improves, and it improves toward the side of Nick Fuentes. Because these imperfect talking points are exactly what Destiny can grab onto. It's like, oh, well, you've said a little too much now. Let me push back. But Nick Fuentes is a greater mind. I consider him a peer. I consider him a mind at my level, although in his own branch of, in his own way of thinking. You don't want to compliment Nick with imperfect talking points, because the Nick talking points are already designed to be fully fortified on every angle. And now you have a stupid fucking idiot in Zerka who comes out and drops some aggression on the audio, and it's not perfect, and Destiny's gonna have to say something against it. And now we get detoured from the actual perfect content of Nick Fuentes. Joel Surrett Music says, my JF be rocking the Shure Mic SM7B. Exactly. Silver Spider sends a super chat. He says, hey, JF, have you heard of the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Mark Robinson? My center-right friends love him because he's a based pro-gun black guy who speaks out against black entitlement. Is the only hope for the future based black politicians. Thank you for the link. I'll have a look. I think I may have covered this guy here or there. I think I can remember him. But no, the based black is not the future of America. Here's why. There is a demographic problem in America for white people, but it is not the expansion of the black population. In fact, the black population is hit very hard on the abortion side. And they are hit very hard with their own murder rate and their own conditions of living. And the fact is, I do not believe that the black population will overtake white people in America. I believe that the Hispanic population is going to overtake the white population in America. But the based black, first, no matter what happens, it seems that the black populations vote Democrat. Even if you have a based black showing up on stream somehow, you know, they publish these little shorts on YouTube, and, oh, this guy is kind of based. But it never happens that they convince a lot of other blacks enough to change the statistic. So it seems that no matter how much you have these based single individuals coming out of a population, the crunching power of social welfare interest and racial interest simply doesn't allow you to get the black population out of systematic support for the left, because it's always in their interest to do so. So for these two reasons, the demographic problem, which is that the black population can merely appears to be merely stable rather than progressing. So it's not like a growing political power in America. And for the other reason, which is that they are way too incentivized at voting left. I don't think that based blacks are a kind of savior that will come and save us. Mount Gox repayment date looms. Is Bitcoin in trouble? People are afraid that there will be this reimbursement of the Mt. Gox people in Bitcoin, and that this will lead them to go into selling their Bitcoin, and this will create a sales hype on the Bitcoin price, which could drop the price. This would happen in October 2023. Founded in 2010, Mt. Gox was once the biggest Bitcoin exchange in the world, estimated to facilitate around 70% of all BTC transactions before its implosion. The now defunct exchange lost 850,000 BTC, 4% of all Bitcoin to be issued in a security breach in 2014. As the current Mt. Gox repayment deadline is scheduled to occur in roughly 3 months, they think that this will lead to potentially a crash of the price. There will be 142,000 Bitcoin and 143,000 in forked cryptocurrency Bitcoin Cash, worth roughly $40 million. And the $4.3 billion worth of Bitcoin. I personally do not think that this is so massive as to induce a massive impact on the price. If there is a combined fear in the market and a combined reaction of fear, there could be some temporary effect. But $4.3 billion worth is something that comes into the Bitcoin market in a bull run on a daily basis, basically. So this is the kind of volume I, at most, will impact you for a day's worth of trade at Binance. Go Away says $4.3 billion is nothing. Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely nothing when you look at how much Michael Saylor is accumulating, and that's just one guy. With one company. I simply do not think that this is enough to induce a market-wide panic of any kind. The judge in the library versus the SEC versus library case is, and also let's not forget that all the Bitcoins that will be reimbursed, some of the people will be holding on to them. I mean, imagine I'm giving you back your Bitcoin that you lost years ago at the middle of a bull run. Of course, you would be incentivized at keeping them and seeing the price rise further. The judge in the case of SEC versus Library has decided not to rule on whether LBC is itself a security. That is really too bad, because of all the negative stuff that this legal case has brought, we expected at least we would have legislative clarity. You know, we would have a judge say, all right, going forward, selling an LBC is illegal or it's legal. But no, the judge says, I will not take position on this, because the SEC does not seek relief against third-party purchasers of LBC. I decline both Library's and the Amici's invitation to rule on whether LBC is itself a security. Simply put, that issue has not been litigated in this case. So we find ourselves with LBC is a security when Odyssey sells it, but it may not be a security when Binance sells it. And you don't even get to know from the freaking legal case. That sucks so much. That really sucks. Shrigmamail sends a super chat. He says, my girlfriend's sister asked my girlfriend how to find a good guy. She said, find a guy at the bar once she turns 21. My girlfriend asked me later if that is a good advice for her sister. I honestly don't know how to find anyone other than the bar these days. Yes, I mean, it depends on how perfect do you want. But the bar is the place where people head. So it's definitely a potential place, yes. but you have to filter yourself. It's like you're not going to get systematically a good guy at the bar. You're going to get an umbrella of different types. You need to filter yourself and choose yourself. From these guys at the bar, there's a bunch of super honest, you know, son of farmers who are just there because they want a wife, and they will fully pair with that wife and fully marry that wife forever. But there will also be a bunch of assholes who are just parasitizing basically the bar system. So you need you're gonna need to exert judgment if you want perfect like Coarse Children level of purity. You need to date at the church, but at the church there's like one guy who's at the age of dating, and he's gonna be a Jesus Christ super cuck. Like, I don't know if that applies. Like, would your girlfriend's sister, would she want that kind of guy, or would that feel like too much of a cuck? But yeah, if you want the totally purity Christian, like, who lived the perfect life, who never took drugs, you might have to go to the church. Rodita Sid says she could go to a trade school and look for someone studying to be an electrician or plumber or welder. That is one way. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to encourage females to go to the plumbing trade school. But you could go at the class and try to catch them as they go out. Where is everyone? Disney World is just about empty. Trip to Walt Disney World or Disneyland with the whole family is too expensive. Yeah, I've been commenting on this before, and I'm super happy it's happening. People are abandoning Disney because it's nonsense. You're gonna spend money for all this kind of fluff and these displays and these cardboards. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's wasteful. It's not green. It's not even green. France is getting prepared. They are gloating because on the 25th of August, there will be a new law coming in allowing the French government to instantly call for the removal of something from social networks. I don't know what will be the impact of this. How will Elon handle this? He's probably going to just give them access to shutting down anything in France. And it sucks. It sucks. But we're going to get country restrictions becoming a thing on social media. I know that Germany is headed there. I know that there are many countries who are already there. And for France, it's going to be on August 25th. And apparently it's going to be like at the second level. They will be demanding that the content be immediately blocked. So I guess you're going to have to get out of these countries if you want freedom to hear and freedom to speak. Completely hilarious error by Business Insider. It's the rush of people leaving Florida due to the unaffordable cost of living and the sound of DeSantis' biggest talking point going poof at the same time. So the left was gloating that people are suddenly leaving Florida. There is an exodus. Haven't you realized? Don't you live in Florida? Haven't you seen all the people with their U-Haul truck leaving Florida? Well, the community notes raised an opposition to these statistics. And now Business Insider had to change their title. We got it wrong. More people moved out of New York and California than Florida in 2021. They inverted the numbers. They took the numbers of people that were fleeing New York and they thought it was to Florida. And they thought it was people who were fleeing Florida to go to New York. They wrote a mainstream media article about mixed up data of that kind. Like, you have to show some IQ here. You have to show some intelligence. If I see data and I'm like, oh, wow, suddenly people are leaving Florida, my first reaction will not be to say, oh, well, this must be true. I must write an article about it explaining why Florida sucks. My first reaction would be, well, there must be an error here, because again and again, Florida has been attracting migration flows within America. There is no reason why suddenly that would change. All of a sudden, revert. Of course, it was their reversal of the number that led them. So now, Business Insider, why don't you get your leftist Twitterettes excited at the idea that, oh yeah, people are leaving New York? Why do you think people are leaving New York? Because of leftist management, prosecutorial leniency, and that kind of crap. And also the whole brainwashing of kids in schools. There is no way New York can attract young families in its current state, except if they are far leftist, basically. I want to come back on the points of yesterday. I gave counsel to a 43-year-old virgin unemployed man, and he came back to me. He was thankful. He appreciated my coverage and my help on his situation. But he says, and I want to illustrate this because there's so many people like this. He says, I'm still worried about possible permanent sexual side effects from SSRI. Bro, when you are in a major depression, thinking of suicide, you're 43 and you've never had a girlfriend. This situation is way much more sterilizing than the one-off potential likelihood, small likelihood that you're going to get a side effect that is a rare side effect of a medication. What is more sterilizing? 0.01% chance of getting that rare side effect, or being in the state that you currently are, which has been sterilizing you for the last 23 years. The answer is this. This needs to change. I hate it when people do this, and it's not hate against him particularly, but someone was actually commenting on this and experiencing the same hate. He says, this is such a great point. It's so obvious, yet countless people fail to grasp it. People will literally lose the love of their life from their deep depression, turn to heroin to cope, and still not use SSRIs due to fears of their side effects. It's a really interesting phenomenon. Here's the thing. If you're 20 years old and you've been doing good, and the depression is a small depression and you have other things to hold on to, then having that puritan approach to medication and say, no, I believe in nature, I believe in myself, I'm not going to take the SSRIs. I'm totally for this. But when you're at 43 and you are at the bottom of the barrel, and you know it's really your last shot at life. If you don't get it right now, you'll never get it right. You will die childless. This is not the right moment to think about these small potential future reasons for not doing something. And this is where being anxious about the future is blocking your own action, your own progression toward health. Go away, says JF. Erectile dysfunction with SSRIs isn't rare. It happens in almost every case, but usually passes a month or two. He was talking about permanent sterilization. Permanent sterilization by SSRIs is so rare, I've never heard about it. Okay. Don't give me this erectile dysfunction crap. I don't give a shit. You can still have babies. We're going to inflate your penis with my... I'm going to drive to your home. I'm going to manually inflate your penis so that you can still penetrate your girlfriend. That is just how dedicated I am. That is just what you get when you send just one super chat to JF. I'm willing to do anything. But yeah, don't give me crap around erectile dysfunction. I don't give a shit. Erectile dysfunction matters to people who use sex for hedonistic purposes. It really doesn't matter to reproduction. Most of the time, there are extreme cases where already the erectile dysfunction is so permanent and so all the time that you can't penetrate a vagina anymore. But this is almost never the case. I hate it when people mix up sterility and fertility problems with erectile dysfunction. That was Ron Perlman. I was talking about him earlier. Breaking, I'm taking my business to Threads. Haters, stay the fuck out. I said, my business. Holy shit, these people. When will Ron Perlman be back on Twitter? The bets are off. I personally expect that he will be back on Twitter. It won't be long. Because even being hated on Twitter has that dopaminergic reward aspect to it. I know because, in a way, I specialize in being hated on Twitter. You know, these leftists, they have to keep acting all the time like they don't like being hated on Twitter. But I don't care. I'm autistic. I can lay out my full strategy in front of you guys, and I don't care about it. Sometimes I do a tweet that I know will get me hate. Sometimes I do a tweet to troll. Sometimes I do a tweet that I know will shock the far leftist. Sometimes I do a tweet that I know will shock the racial extremist. And that is my job. I convert personal frustrations to exposure for my book. And it's amazing. It converts. I make money from this shit. But as someone who specializes in being hated at times and being loved also, I know that there is a dopaminergic reward in both cases. And I'm sure that the Ron Perlman of this world, they experience the same. They love triggering the Trumpist, as they would call us, I guess. Biden DOJ indicts a whistleblower was prepared to testify against the Biden family. This is fascinating because it's a true weaponization, as Zero Hedge covers it, of the legal system. They went after this guy because he was getting ready to come out with, he alleges that there has been dishonest and bribery-type dealings. He was wanting to expose the information, and he gets prosecuted. I told the DOJ that Hunter was associated with a very senior retired FBI official who had a distinct physical characteristic. He had one eye. So he's giving these clues that he knows something. He's giving these clues that will allow a Hunter or a Joe Biden to know, oh my God, I know who he's talking about. And boom, he gets sued. Biden's DOJ has charged Luft with failing to register under the Foreign Agents Act. So he's not even getting sued for having the information. He's getting sued for unrelated, bureaucratic, oh, you forgot to register this. That seems like targeted punishment, targeted weaponization of the judiciary to intimidate anyone who would come out with negative stuff about the Biden. Remus suggests that we call the man with one eye in this affair the Zio Club. Have you ever dealt with the Zio Club? I love the nickname. I love the nickname. The Zio Club works in the dark. He's always there watching. I didn't mean the pun, literally. I said watching. I am sorry. I was just trying to make a narrative. It was just natural to say watching. It was not meant to mock the Zio Club. Red states, blue cities, who's to blame for America's homicide crisis? Well, yeah, I mean, this comes again and again in right-wing versus left-wing debates. The left comes and says, well, there's lots of murders in Republican states. And again and again, and the response of the right wing is always, well, these murders are happening in blue cities. And I understand. I understand what's happening here. In red states, the gun laws are adhering to the Second Amendment. They are more permissive, like the Second Amendment is permissive. When you are permissive, it allows the white population to self-defend with their guns, which they have plenty of. Now, when you are permissive, the Second Amendment hasn't been designed for violent demographics in extremely populated neighborhoods. But it doesn't matter. It should still apply. But it wasn't designed with this in mind. The people who wrote the Second Amendment, they had nuclear families. They were not living next to each other. There was a distance between farms, distance between neighbors. And really, having weapons meant being able to eventually defend your home against aggression and potentially against the government or against a war force as part of a civil war. But eventually, America became this place where there are large city with poor black populations, with demographics that are higher in violence, and these demographics eventually clash with the reality of the Second Amendment, which is that either you apply the Second Amendment like in the red states, and they will end up using these guns to kill each other. And that's why there's so much murders happening by black people against black people. Or you violate the Constitution and you say, well, that right that the Constitution has granted to all American, it's not a right that we should give anymore to these populations. So that's the approach of the leftist states. It's to say, well, okay, you have that right, but no, we're canceling it. Because you're just killing yourselves way too much. We're not going to give you that right. Now, the two approaches have their pluses. I guess that you could hope that the leftist approach would reduce death by guns, but unfortunately, it won't reduce other forms of violence. So it's kind of a moot intervention. And on the other side, the Republican approach is principled. And it says, you know, it's ultimately your responsibility to find ways of living that are more in line with what the founders had than what you have. That is, it's your responsibility to have a home that is clean enough, distant enough from other homes, and separate enough from other homes that you'll eventually be able to defend yourself against the pudding of violence that you live in. I like the principled approach because the principled approach calls for a better future. The principled approach says, you know what? The government is not going to come and delude and deceive yourself about the rights that you truly have by virtue of the Constitution just because harm or just because, oh, what, too much murder on the stats. It's your responsibility ultimately to find a neighborhood and organize your community so that you don't have constant killings of each other. Whereas the leftist approach, unfortunately, pushes this problem toward the future for an indefinite amount of time. With the leftist approach, the government takes over that right and says, we're going to handle it for you because you don't know what to do with it. And it leaves the issue of demographics of high violence continuing into the future. At least in the Republican principled approach, I can see a distant solution in the future. With the leftists, I can't. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you very much. There was this other news item, but doesn't seem very important. CNN is celebrating that they got Tommy Tuberville to say white nationalists are racist. Because he had initially said, well, when I hear white nationalist, to me, what they're calling is an American. And of course, I think you have nothing to gain in making these step backs on your previous statements, because he came back and said, oh, now that I've done research, you know, white nationalists are racist, and I totally disavow the racist. You have nothing to gain by kneeling like this to the left, because they're still writing an article about you and heavily, you know, it's like Rachel Maddow and how she was covering the Nick Fuentes story. They will still make an article that is negative about you. They will still call you basically a white nationalist supporter. They will just say, oh yeah, but he did change his view. Bullet dodged, like Rachel Maddow says, but it's an equal level of smearing. It's not like the fact that you've apologized will lead some leftists to read this article and say, oh, what a reasonable person. No, no, they all think you're a racist. They all think you're a secret supporter of racist. They will interpret your apology as, oh, well, okay, he has understood that it wasn't in his interest to be publicly racist, but he's still racist in his heart. So absolutely useless to be doing this apology tour that the leftists want you to do. That's it for tonight, boys. Thank you so much for the generous support. Shrigma Mail, Silver Spider, Balloon Nut, massive donation by Balloon Nut tonight. Thank you so much for making this show possible. I will see you all tomorrow. Thank you.